I am excited about this series. I haven't really come to New Life very much. Actually, not at all. Last week was my first week. I snuck in. I had this really long hair. And some people are like, hey, this is your first week. And I was like, no, remember we talked last week. I had the long hair. And what's funny about that is I cut it this week, right? And my wife was away. She's gone. She's been out of town all week long. So she had no idea. So I've been rocking this long hair for like 2 years or something, you know? And she walks in and she comes up and I open the door and she was like, you know, who are you and what did you do with my husband? You know, kind of thing. It was amazing. But yeah, I'm really glad to be here. I'm a pastor here in Wichita. I go to a small church about the same size called the Wheatland Mission. We meet kind of down south over by East High School a little bit, and just a great community. But Chad and I have been buds for a while. We worked together for a while. We've been in a lot of prayer together. We've searched the scriptures together. We've served the community together, and it's been just cool just being a part of his life and his journey. And I was telling somebody last week that I remember when New Life was just this random idea. Like, I remember sitting with Chad and just hearing him just dream about someday that this community who would be a community of change makers. Like, he said that over and over and over. And I just had this sense last week that this is it. Like, you guys are that community. Like, this was once just an idea. And now you're a church. And that's awesome. Yeah. Yeah, and not just a church, but a church who has a worship leader that plays two keyboards at once. I was like, you know, and he's singing and he's jiving I think it's your superpower, dude. It's great. So real quick, I want to show you this picture. This is a picture of the two women in my life and myself. This was last year after a race that I did. And it was super cold out, but this is my wife, Kelsey. She's a psychologist here in town. She's the one that got startled by my short haircut. She loves it, by the way. We've been married about 11 years. We don't have any kids, but it sounds like maybe sometime this year we might be adopting. So we're just really praying and hoping that that maybe this will be the year that that happens. So, and then this other short lady in my life, this is my mom, and she lives here. She lives in an apartment with two little puppies, and the puppies are a joy of her life. And yeah, these are the two women in my life. And I'll tell you a little bit more about mom and mom's story a little bit here in a little bit. But you know, I really like it. And again, I'm excited to hear about you know, not wanting to be an adult anymore, you know, not wanting to marriage anymore, not wanting to be a parent anymore. I like it because there's like this deep sense of like honest space there that we all kind of come to, which again we'll talk about that a little bit later. Because I think all of us know that sometimes we get to a point where we no longer want to do whatever it is we've been doing. We no longer want to live into the life that we've kind of created for ourselves. We no longer want to. And this week especially is especially important, talking about I no longer want a Christian anymore. And so so one story about my mom. So a few years ago, I think it's been about six now, her husband passed away. She was living in Florida with my stepdad, and great guy. He had passed away, and you know, I got the call early one morning, and I was on a plane, you know, within a couple hours, and headed out there, and went and met with mom, and took care of funeral arrangements, and kind of started figuring out her bills and all that stuff. And financially, they weren't in a really good spot, and so him leaving was really hard. Or him passing away was really tough on her, not just emotionally, but like physically and practically as well. And she ended up coming here to Wichita, Kansas. I moved her here just so that she could be closer to me and Kelsey. And she had a lot of medical needs then. the extent to which I really didn't know or understand. But I remember the first few months of her living here, we were kind of getting this rhythm and trying to figure things out. And man, Mom was going through just aside from grieving from the loss of her husband that she loved immensely. She was going through a lot of just physical struggles, a lot of stuff that, she's got COPD real bad, and she couldn't breathe very well, the doctors couldn't figure that out. And then not only that, she had these really scary spells where she would forget who she was, and she would lose her memory, and pretty much kind of lose her mind a little bit. Like, she would start mumbling and shaking real bad, and it was a terrifying thing to see your mom go through this. And I would show up at her apartment, and she'd be in one of these spells, and I just didn't know what to do. And you know, I engaged as much as I could and tried to talk her out of them. And I remember we had to call the ambulance over and over those first few months to have them come in and pick her up and take her to the hospital. And she was in and out of the ER so much those first few months. And aside from even me, like, getting there and talking through things, I would get these late night calls, like 3 a.m. calls of going, "Hi, this is such and such over at St. Joseph. Your mom's here in the ER, and she had said to call you." And so, sure enough, like over and over and over for months and months, I would find myself headed to the ER 3 a.m. And I just remember this one morning. Of course, it was just one of those mornings where I had a lot going on the next day, and maybe I was preaching or speaking in the morning, lots of pressure, lots going on. And I remember getting another one of these phone calls, and I remember just driving. I immediately get in my car and I drive, start heading over to St. Joseph, and being at my end with all of this, just going, "Okay, Jesus, okay, let me just be honest right now. Because I'm trying to live into my Christian identity of serving a widow who I love immensely, of serving an orphan who doesn't have parents, who doesn't have community in Wichita. Like, that's part of my Christian identity, and I'm trying to, like, love her with everything I got. I'm trying to take care of my mom with everything I have, and I feel like I'm just doing this alone, and I'm done. I've had it." Because all those months I've been praying and praying and praying and praying, "Lord, will you just help me out? Will you help get some tests done? Will you help figure out what's going on with mom so that we can finally get over this?" And at that point, I just felt like, okay, like, you're gone, you're absent. All right, Jesus, you're not here. I'm finished. I'm through. I was just so frustrated. And I kind of came to that point that a lot of us come to, where we no longer want to do it anymore. No longer want to do this Christian thing anymore, because it just seems like another thing tacked onto another thing in our life. But it's not, it's interesting, because it's not only, it didn't happen just then with my mom, it's kind of happening right now. My dad, I've been hearing it kind of in his voice quite a bit too, because his dad passed away about a month ago, his sister passed away this week, and his mom's about to pass away, and he's kind of at the same point of just going, "Lord, where are you? I thought we were in this together." And he's kind of going, "I don't know if I want to follow you anymore. I don't know if I want to do this anymore." We all come to this point, and all of us get to this place, but it doesn't always sound just like that. I kind of brainstormed and did a little bit. I was like, what other ways does I don't want a Christian sound like? So maybe one of these or a couple of these sounds like you. Just ask yourself, have I been to that spot? Have I been to that place? Maybe "I don't want a Christian anymore" sounds more like, "I believe there's a God. I believe Jesus probably was who he said he was, but sometimes it feels harder to be a Christian than maybe it's worth, so I don't want a Christian anymore." Or maybe it's this: "I'm at the end of my rope, I have nothing more to give, and I don't see, sense, feel, or experience God anymore like I used to, and I don't want to feel alone anymore." Or maybe it's this: It just seems so invisible, so abstract. It seems too irrelevant, and I'm not sure I want to believe anymore. Or maybe it's, "I'm exhausted trying to keep up with all the Christians around me, reading the latest Christian books and listening to the newest Christian music and making sure I have the most updated Jesus fish on the back of my car. I don't want to do it anymore." Or maybe it's this: "I hate trying to live up to the standards of Christianity. I'm such a mess. I don't have it all together like the people at church, and I'm tired of wearing the mask, and I don't want to try anymore. Or maybe it's this last one. I thought it would make things better. I thought I would get more ahead in life. I thought God would solve my problems, and they are still here, so I don't want to stress anymore. Sorry, I thought I turned this off. You see, not wanting to Christian anymore can sound like a lot of different things. It doesn't always just come out as saying, I don't want a Christian anymore. It can sound like any of these and a plethora of other things going on in your life. But let me just make two real quick comments about us not wanting to Christian anymore. Number one, it's not just you. It's not just you. This room is full of people who have been there. This room is this city is full of Christians who have been at that spot, who have been at the end of themselves, who have looked Jesus in the face and said, I don't want to do it anymore. It's not just you. Every single one of us has been there. Even believe it or not, pastors get there. I know, we're supposed to be these great moral and spiritual juggernauts, right? We're supposed to ride in on clouds of assurity and poop Bible verses or something. We're supposed to be these great spiritual leaders who never come to the end of ourselves. But I'll tell you, let me just be honest. Even pastors get to this space where we just go, I don't know what to do, and I don't want to do it anymore. Every person of faith, I believe, does this. I've got a lot of friends who are Muslim and Buddhist, and it's amazing because even they in their faith find themselves in that spot where they're just at this space where they're like, I just don't want to do it anymore. And I think there's something, it's part of that thing that we call faith, that at some point or another, we find the end of ourselves in the faith that we can offer. So it's not just us. It's not just you. It's all of us. We're kind of all in this together. But number two, let me make this point as well, that our wants matter. Our wants, our desires, they matter immensely. Our wants form our decisions. Our wants guide our actions. They shape our lives. Think about that. Decisions. Our actions, our lives are shaped by our wants, our desires, out of the cries of our hearts. What the philosophers used to call our telos, like this whole thing that pulls us and brings us into the future, this meaning that we're searching after. It's the desires, like I said, the cries of our hearts. So kind of a fun thought experiment that I thought I would give you guys to kind of think about. Maybe this would make a great lunch conversation for you. So there's this Russian filmmaker. His name is Andrei Tarkovsky, and he has this film out called The Stalker, right? And it's about these three men. It's like a pastor, like priest or spiritual man, and then it's this adventurer, and they go on this long lost quest to find this room, right? And they finally find this room, and they get to it, and all of a sudden they stop and they start discussing what this room is. And this room is a special room that when you go in it, all the wants and desires of your hearts get filled. Like they go into this room, and everything they want will happen. They get. And at that moment in the film, like you kind of expect them to just plow right in because this has been their long lost quest, right? This is what they've been going after. But all of a sudden you start to realize that they're hesitating, that they're unsure about if they want to go in or not. You know, because all of a sudden they start thinking about the implications of everything that their hearts desire. They start thinking about all their wants. And how that wouldn't just impact their life, but the people around them and the world as well. And so the fun part of all this is like, and your lunch discussion today might be this. Would you go in? I mean, would you go in knowing that everything you want would be fulfilled? And what if you did? And what kind of impact would that have on your community and your family? What kind of impact would that have on the world? It's kind of a fun thing to think about. And if we play that out a bit, we find ultimately that our wants matter. Like the things that are desires of our hearts, they matter immensely. And we must attend to them. We must address them. We must engage them. And if we don't, what we find is if we try to have this way of like shoving those desires down and just trying to push them away and ignore them, especially this one. I don't want a Christian anymore. I mean, that's one that we can just easily like overlook and keep going. You know, we just stuff it, and push it out. But if we keep doing that, what we find is we can get lost in that inner struggle, that inner tension. Some may call it the inner dialogue of what we're talking about, not wanting a Christian anymore. And then, of course, once you get there, there's often what? Shame, right? That all of a sudden comes in and guilt that leads in, which usually creates kind of a toxic environment inside of ourselves. And so we hide it, right? All of a sudden, we're experiencing lots of shame and lots of guilt, so we try to hide it, which then we start to experience isolation, right? And we find ourselves at a distance with the people that we love and the people that are around us that we know are on our side and on our team. And all of a sudden, we find ourselves lonely. And loneliness starts to creep in. And before we know it, we can find ourselves consumed with our own selves, wandering in the darkness of our own inner world. All because we didn't address the actual wants and desires of our heart, because all we did is try to take these things, shove them down, and move on. So at some point, if we're going to take these seriously, we have to ask ourselves, you know, what is God's story? How would God's story speak to this whole idea of not wanting the Christian anymore? And I'm going to go to a place this morning that I don't think would be a typical place to go in a sermon like this, but I think it's definitely a fun place to go. And I'll just start by saying this. In the ancient world, which is kind of where we find ourselves in the story, names mattered immensely. Like your name, whatever you were named, would be maybe it was a sign of something that had happened, right? But it also kind of set a trajectory for your life as well. And so names mattered immensely. So we're going to pick up in Genesis 32, and I think they'll throw it up here on the screen for you. But so there's this, let me give you some context. Abraham, God's chosen individual, was given a promise that through him and through his family, God would bless the entire world, right? So God made this promise that through Abraham, he'd bless the entire world. Abraham had Isaac, his son. Isaac had Jacob, his son. And Jacob is kind of a mess, and we pick up with Jacob here. And here's what it says. That night, Jacob got up and took his two wives, which that's a whole nother sermon altogether. Jacob got up and he took his two wives and his two female servants and his 11 sons, and he crossed the ford of Jabbok. And after he had sent them across the stream, he sent over all of his possessions. So he sends his women ahead with all of his stuff, which is never a good idea. But he has parted ways with all of that stuff. And Jacob was left alone. And then a man wrestled with him until daybreak. A man wrestled with him until daybreak. Basically, what we find as we keep reading the story, that this man wasn't just a man. He was a representative of God himself. Jacob had actually wrestled with God himself. Fist to fist, hand to hand, Jacob had physically, like this isn't some sort of a euphemism. When the man saw that he could not overpower him, he touched the socket of Jacob's hip so that his hip was wrenched, and he wrestled with the man. Then the man said, "Let me go, for it is daybreak." But Jacob replied, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." The man asked him, what is your name? And Jacob answered. And then the man said, "Your name will no longer be Jacob, but it will be Israel, because you have struggled with God and with humans and have overcome." Now here's the deal. We see Jacob in this story. I love this story because we see Jacob wrestling with God. But it gets even better than that. It gets deeper than that because of, do you see that little A right there? If you follow that, if you have your scripture and you look at that A, that signifies something, something in the translation. So if you go down to your text at the bottom of your Bible, that A will say, will make a note for this idea of Israel. Now, Israel is a Hebrew word. It's a Hebrew name that means to wrestle or to struggle with God. And so as we start thinking about this, God actually names his people Israel, a people who would struggle with him, a people who would wrestle with him. Think about that. The God of the universe, who calls his people, is going to name them a people that would wrestle with him, that would struggle with him. To me, I think about that, and I think about what an amazing honor and gift that is. And again, it's not just he's not just talking about Jacob wrestling with him there. He's talking about the trajectory, the interaction that's up ahead that he's expecting and anticipating from his people. In a sense, it's almost like he's giving them space to be a people who would wrestle with him, a space that to be a people who would struggle with him. Now, I don't know about you, but to think of myself as a person who's been given permission to struggle and wrestle with God is profoundly impactful for me, especially in a world a lot of times, and I don't want to bash any other churches or the Christian world or anything. A lot of times I feel like we kind of get to this place in our faith where we're kind of told that we have to have the we have to put on these masks of perfection, that we just have to have the faith and believe and just keep moving. But I'm telling you, like, God himself names his people a people that would wrestle and struggle with him. And if you read the story, the rest of the story, what you find is that people is a mess. They're such a mess. And their entire story is a story of a people that are wrestling and struggling with God himself. And over and over and over in the scriptures, we meet and we're introduced to all these heroes of the faith. And they're not heroes of the faith because of necessarily all the great things that they did. It's because they weren't afraid to get in there and wrestle and struggle with God. And yes, they absolutely make a mess of things along the way. But God continues to invite them over and over to struggle and wrestle with him. And again, we find that wrestling is this deep, intimate act. Like think about if I put Sean in a full Nelson, right? Like, which would never happen, but this is Sean. He's a great dude. He's a big old guy and a lot bigger than me, and he would just crush me like an ant, right? But if I had him in a full Nelson, he had me in a full Nelson, you gotta think, we're like face to face. If we're wrestling together, you can only wrestle when you're together, when you're close. Wrestling is a deeply intimate act of togetherness. I'd actually say it's when we stop wrestling and we stop struggling that we find ourselves in this place, that we find ourselves in places of loss. When we find ourselves maybe wearing that Christian mask that sometimes overwhelms us. I'd say it's when we throw in the towel and we decide not to wrestle or struggle anymore that we find ourselves in trouble. So Israel, the people who are invited to wrestle, to struggle with God. And so I love that as you keep reading the story, I want to turn our attentions to the Psalms. Right, and so there's another book in the Bible, if you're not familiar with it, called the Psalms. And the Psalms are pretty much the prayer of God's people, the people who struggled and wrestled with God. Right, so the Psalms are just they're just prayers of the people, and that's how we have to read them. We can't read them like we read the rest of the Bible. They're just the prayers of the people, and they're there. They're there to not necessarily they aren't there to tell the story of God, but rather to teach us how to relate with God, to teach us how to be with God. To say, here's what this wrestling looks like, or rather, it's what it sounds like. And so I want to read some of these verses from some of the Psalms that you may not necessarily expect to be there, but you can hear the tension. And I just want you to listen to these. You hear the tension between people and God and kind of where they're at. So Psalm 22, just listen to this. The person praying says, "My God, why have you abandoned me? Why are you so far away when I groan for help? Every day I call you my God, but you do not answer. Every night I lift my voice, but I find no relief. How about that for a prayer of a people of God? Or this one, how long, O Lord, will you look on and do nothing? Rescue me from the fierce attacks. Protect me from those lions. How about that? How long, Jesus? How long, God, are you going to sit around and do absolutely nothing? And again, these aren't fluffy words. These came out of like darkness and despair and struggle and tension. And again, as we keep reading these psalms, these prayers, we find that we're given permission to approach God honestly. And so Psalm 69, deeper and deeper I sink into the mire. I can't find a foothold. I am in deep water and the floods overwhelm me. I am exhausted from crying out and my throat is parched. My eyes are swollen and weeping, waiting for my God to help me. And another one, I cry out to you, God. Yes, I shout. Oh, that God would listen to me. When I was in sleep trouble, when I was in deep trouble, I searched for the Lord. All night long, I prayed with hands lifted towards the heaven, but my soul was not comforted. I think of God and I moan, overwhelmed with longings for his help. And then he goes on, he kind of turns the corner and he starts like yelling at God. He says, you do not let me sleep. I am too distressed even to pray. I think of the good old days long since ended when my nights were filled with joyful songs. I search my soul and ponder the difference now. Has the Lord rejected me forever? Will he never again be kind to me? Is his unfailing love gone forever? Have his promises permanently failed? Has God forgotten to be gracious? Has he slammed the door on his compassion? There are people that wrestled and struggled with God. And again, they teach us, these prayers teach us how to do that. And if you keep reading the Psalms, you get the full range of emotive engagement. Like you get the joy, you get the excitement, you get all the things that we experience. But for this morning, I want us to know that we've been invited to this space where we can wrestle with God. Jesus gives us this space. And so as we start to wrap up, let me make a last couple notes here. Number one, Jesus gives us space to be honest. He invites us to be real. And he meets us. He actually meets us in the reality of our real wants and desires. And that's, you know, honestly, that's one of the things that about following him and being a Christian that is different from a lot of the rest of the world. Is that Jesus, if you read the stories of Jesus, he again, over and over and over, meets people where they're at, in the mess of things. It's not, hey, get your stuff together, figure it out, get your language right, and then come to me. It's, no, I'm going to come to you, and I'll meet you where you're actually at. And he gives people space to be honest. So here's a slide, it says this. It says, be honest to yourselves about where you are with God. God gives his people permission to be honest, but be honest to yourselves about where you are with God. We have to do that. We have to be a community and a people who are honest. Be honest with yourself. Start there. Don't shove it down. Say, okay, I'm at the end. I don't know where to go anymore. I'm not sure. I know when I get to that place, I kind of start retelling the story of how I got to where I was. Like way back when, why did I even begin this journey of following Jesus? Where did this faith even start for me? And I allow that journey just to remind me of the story of Jesus and I and where we've been. So be honest with yourself. Number two, be honest with God. Be honest to God about where you are with him. Don't be afraid to wrestle with him. He gives you permission. The God of all creation gives you permission to wrestle with him. You have permission to wrestle with God. You have permission to be honest to God. You have permission to use whatever language is necessary and needed to approach him as you actually are. Because it's only in that space of where we actually are that God can help meet us there and grow beyond it. So be honest. And there's this great story in the gospel of this dad whose boy couldn't speak, and he meets Jesus. He just kind of stumbles upon Jesus. And Jesus, of course, meets this boy where he's at, filled with demons, can't speak. He heals him, right? He heals him. And then the father, his prayer is this. He says, it's such a simple prayer, and I want to give this as a gift to you this morning. He says, the father says this, "Lord, I believe, but help me in my unbelief." Think about that. The prayer of a father whose son was just healed. And he says, "Lord, I believe, but help me in my unbelief." How about that as a prayer starter? What if you started your prayer life there? "Lord, okay, I believe in some stuff. I believe in this stuff, but man, there's a lot of space inside of me that doesn't believe." What happens if we tell God, "Lord, I don't think I believe in you anymore"? Like, imagine that space. And I guess what I'm saying this morning is he'll meet you there. And to not be afraid of going there. So be honest with yourself. Be honest with God. And the last thing is to realize that sometimes you need a tag team partner. Or a lot of tag team partners. And so the last part of this is to be honest with one another. To invite your community, your other people around you into that space. And I've got a cheesy picture I was going to throw up here, but I don't know. Sometimes you need a tag team partner, right? All that to say, just be honest with one another. And that's one thing that, here's what I'll say, that's one thing that I think Chad does really well, Pastor Chad. If you don't know him, get to know him. If you don't know the team here that helps make New Life what it is, get to know them. If you don't know the people you're sitting around, get to know them. Because one of the core foundational values, whether they say it or not, is honesty. And I'll tell you, Chad just has a way, and so many of you guys I know just have a way of just giving, every time we talk, me space, anybody space, to just be who they are. To go, "Hey, you can go ahead and throw the Christian mask at the door. Whoever you are here, come on. Come on, you're just invited to come. Come along for the journey. Just come with us." And that's one of the things I love about this community and this church so much. It's one of the things I love about being with Chad is because I never have to be afraid of what I'm going to say. If it's the right thing or the wrong thing, if I'm not being pastoral enough or whatever, he just gives me the space to be who I am. And then he goes, "You know what? He doesn't always have answers for me. He doesn't always have good answers for me." But he's willing to walk with me in it. And as I look at this community, what I'm saying is that's what this community is. And so be honest with yourself, be honest with God, and be honest with the people around you and give them space, allow them to be a community who will walk with you in your mess. And don't be afraid to go, "You know what? I'm done. I don't think I want to follow Jesus anymore." Don't just disappear. Don't just disappear, because you'll find yourself at odds and struggling and wrestling for probably the rest of your life. Just be honest with the community about it and just see how Jesus might use them in that space. So sometimes we don't want a Christian anymore. We all get to that space sometimes. You're not alone. Our wants matter, and we need to be honest about that. This morning, what I'd like to do, just kind of as we wrap up, I'm going to ask Zan to come up. Here's what I want to do, because this could be a lot of information just kind of thrown at you. And this could be like, you know, just one of those sermons that just coming at you. What I ask Zan and the leadership team if we could do is if we could just give you a little bit of space to maybe start there. Start with that prayer that the father said, "Lord, I believe, but help me in my unbelief." Or maybe for you, you're not even at the "I believe" part. Maybe you're just like, "All right, homeboy up front is talking about God and I'm not even there. So God, if there's a God, or if I'm just talking about air or to air, I don't really believe in you." I want to give you some space wherever you are to be honest with God and with yourself. And for some of you, it's "Lord, thank you so much. We're in a good spot right now. but I know others who aren't. So just a couple minutes. I'm gonna ask you maybe just if you want to just close your eyes, if you just want to chill a little bit. If this is uber spiritual and you're really uncomfortable, totally fine. Just take these next moments as just a gift where nothing's being demanded of you at all. You can just sit back and just relax for a few minutes. But what I'd love for you to do is just for a couple minutes, just be honest with yourself. Have a conversation with God. And maybe consider the fact that the God of the universe invites us to wrestle with him and to struggle. It takes some trust to be honest with God. And as a believer in Jesus, we call that trust faith. Because we trust him enough to have the faith to go wherever I'm at, we know you'll meet me there. And so as the week continues, as you guys dive into Trunk or Treat, you guys welcome Chad and Shauna back and catch up with them and hear stories about that. Whatever you got going on, the work, the kids, hopefully the naps, whatever it is, whatever you got going on, I hope that you'll be honest in that space, that you'll invite Jesus in that space. I hope you guys as a community will never stop wrestling with God. And we'll never stop wrestling with God together. And so Jesus, the God of the universe, gives you permission to do that. And that's who we get to be as the church. And what we find on the other side of that wrestling is we get to be a people of hope, who bring hope into the world, a people of love when there's so much hatred in the world, a people of peace when there's so much chaos and craziness going on in the world. And that's the stuff, you know, sometimes I don't want to be Christian, but that's the stuff I really want to do and be. I want to be a person of love. I want to be a people of hope. I want to live my life in peace, right? And Jesus, that stuff, it comes from Jesus. But it starts from us just allowing him to meet us where we're actually at. So let me pray, and then we'll be done. So Lord, God of the universe, I thank you for new life. I thank you for the church that meets here on Sunday mornings, the honest community that they are. I thank you for yourself just allowing us the space to be honest with you, to be open with you, even when we feel like we're at odds with you. I pray that we would never stop struggling, never stop wrestling. And I pray through that, Lord, that you would meet us. Just meet us there in that tension, that we would have the faith enough to meet you there. And Lord, that you would, your spirit would guide us and get us through that space of not wanting to follow you anymore. Lord, so that we could be a people of hope, a people of joy, of love, and a people of peace. In your name.